This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Oh, yeah. What's going on, DMV? You know who it is. Youngest in Charge Movement. Lynnell Willingham here with you live and local on 106.7 The Fan. And we're always live and free on the Odyssey app. Ride with me. And to take you up to 9:10 tonight as we get you geared up. What have the fellas been calling it? The late night Nats. Their West Coast journey continues. Game number 3 against the Seattle Mariners is tonight. Mackenzie Gore on the bump, 9:40 first pitch. And like I just mentioned, pregame coverage gets rolling right here on the Fan at 9:10 with Charlie Slows and Dave Jagler. Hopefully, if you are the Washington Nationals, you can pick right up where you left off last night. 9-0 winners over the Seattle Mariners, who currently, you know, first place in the AL West. So it's not like you're taking on a bottom feeder, word to Ken Rosenthal. This is actually a big league team that you beat last night. And it's so ironic. If you all were listening to the beginning of the show last night, myself and Lil Top, Ben Strober, were talking about the man on the bump last night, Trevor Williams. And we were thinking, like, man, Kay Cavalli's coming up sooner rather than later. And I know he's going to spend some more time where he currently is to try to get, you know, his stamina up, and that's great. They have a plan for him. At some point, though, Cade Cavalli will be a part of this rotation before season's end, and the conversation that myself and Ben were having is, who do you send? Who do you move out of the starting rotation? Is it Trevor Williams or is it Mitch Parker? Through the first 7 starts of this season, I think it would have been a very interesting conversation, because Mitch Parker's had his struggles. Trevor Williams had his struggles. And it's ironic about Trevor, because last year he was kind of one of the bright spots before he got hurt, but got off to a slow start this year. Last night, though, in Fuego, 6 innings pitched, 3 hits allowed, 2 punch outs, 0 earned runs. And he was a big part of the efforts last night for the Washington Nationals. Brad Lord coming in, cleaning things up, playing well, pitching well down the stretch. It was a great performance from this team. Bats were talky hot, though, last night, and it was one of those games where vibes are sky high and it makes you feel positive about this group. The irony of everything is, no matter what they do good here for the next week, 2 weeks, that Ken Rosenthal bombshell is going to be the backdrop of everything that happens with this group. So we'll see if they can continue to play well. Like I said, Mackenzie Gore on the bump tonight, as they play game 3 of a 3-game set versus the Seattle Mariners. We got a lot to get to before we hand things over to Charlie Slows and Dave Jagler. Heard Toby and Danny talking about this. I peeped it this morning via ESPN, of all places. Getting local news from ESPN always is weird. Means it's something big. The Caps, with a major, major social media boo-boo, or PR boo-boo, that we'll discuss and get into a little bit later on in the show. We also have the Eastern Conference Finals continuing tonight. Indiana with a chance to end the Knicks season tonight and punch their ticket to the NBA Finals. So we'll touch on that before we get out of here. And we'll also revisit a story that came out, what was it, last week or 2 weeks ago? And it was about Caleb Williams. And it was the story written by, I think it was Seth Wickersham of ESPN, talking to Caleb Williams' father. And a lot of things were spilled, including Caleb, you know, potentially concocting a plot to where he would do anything to bypass the Chicago Bears at number 1, including going to the USFL, right? Caleb actually addressed those, I don't even want to call them rumors, addressed the allegations, addressed the interview, the book coming out and all. He addressed it all, and we'll let you hear from Caleb Williams, because pretty interesting response from one Caleb Williams. I like the kid. I think he's going to end up being a very damn good quarterback in this league. But I don't know if he should have addressed the Seth Wickersham stuff, because there's really,
you know, no way that he can come out looking squeaky clean. I will say this as a little bit of a teaser for when we play it a little bit later on. I thought he handled himself well for the most part. He's just honest. This is an honest kid. And I think he's going to have a big-time bounce-back year under Ben Johnson with the added weapons on that Chicago Bears offense. We'll let you hear from Caleb a little bit later on in the show. What I want to start off with here is the performance of all performances, man. The season of all seasons. And it took me a while to get on board with this group because everyone keeps talking about how young and inexperienced Oklahoma City is. For them to put belt to ass the way that they did last night against Minnesota, think about it, right? When you're down 3-1 in a postseason series, your backs are against the wall. That desperation exists that you simply cannot fake. So I just feel like at some point we got to start putting some legitimate respect on the Oklahoma City Thunder and where they stand among some of the all-time great teams. Their regular season, 68 wins, winning by an average of 12.8 points per game. It's the best point differential, right? It's the best point differential in NBA history. So they're already amongst the all-time great teams when it comes to that number. And then Shai Gilgeous-Alexander last night in closeout fashion, 34 points, 7 rebounds, 8 assists, doing it all. He is totaled, this is via our guy Hembo of ESPN, he is totaled 2,960 points this season, including the playoffs. That is the most by any player entering the NBA Finals since Michael Jordan in 1993. So if you're looking for some context as to just how good Shai Gilgeous-Alexander has been, there you go. There you go. He is literally having one of the all-time great seasons in the history of the NBA, and it's really cool to watch because I know there are a lot of people out there that are upset and sad and concerned that we're 48 minutes away from having a Indiana-Oklahoma City NBA Finals. Let me tell you this. There is nothing that's better for the league than this. There is nothing that's better than the league for this. How does the NBA continue to grow after LeBron James and Steph Curry? By featuring a finals like this. You think about the core of Oklahoma City. They're young as hell. This group will be together for the next 6-7 years. The same thing for the Pacers. And when you look at Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Tyrese Halliburton, they are both, Halliburton more so, on his way. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander already there. They are superstars in this league. And after this series, one's going to have a ring. This series, to me, is the best case scenario for the NBA moving forward. 110%. And I know there are people out there that look at Indiana as a small market team. I don't want to hear any of that. Good basketball is going to be played between two of the top young stars in this league that will be ushering this thing forward. So I know it's not Anthony Edwards, who you all seemingly crowned way too prematurely. But damn it, it's a way better thing. Those numbers I just gave you on Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, like that's nuts. Not since Michael Jordan have we seen a regular season and postseason run like we're seeing right now from Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. But you all want to tell me that we're not seeing good basketball? Kiss my tuchus. We'll let you hear from Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, fresh off of his 34-point, 7-rebound, 8-assist performance last night. He had this to say post-game after punching his ticket to the NBA Finals.
Yeah, it's a really good feeling. Think stuff you dream about as a kid. I just want to shout out these fans. They've been here. A couple years I got here, there's some really dark times in this arena, not fun times, and these fans have been by our side through thick and thin, so we appreciate them first and foremost. And then, of course, I want to thank my teammates. Without them, I'm nothing. Clear as day. I don't have 124 points by myself. I love these guys to death. Now, with all that being said, this is a step in the right direction, but we have a lot more work to do, and we know that, and that's what we're focused on. So let's buckle up and get ready.
SGA, as humble as they come, when in reality he shouldn't be. He is the man All of you that have questions about who the face of the NBA is, you just heard from him. You just heard from him. Bill Simmons of The Ringer inspired an exercise that we'll chew on a little bit later on in the show. Who are the top 10 players right now in the association? I'll give you a little hint about my list. The man we just spoke from, clearly at the top of that list. Another young superstar that obviously had drawn the short end of the stick here in this series was Anthony Edwards. I was super critical of how Anthony Edwards played in game four. Simply too passive. I give credit to Oklahoma City's defense that they did a good job muddying up the looks for Anthony Edwards, but he just didn't show up in this series when it mattered the most. And when you get blitzed the way that they did in that first quarter, they scored 9 points in the first 12 minutes of regulation last night. If that is not a credit to Mark Daigneault and the defense of the Oklahoma City Thunder, then I don't know what it is. Here is Anthony Edwards postgame talking about how much it stings getting bounced in the Western Conference Finals.
How much does it hurt, and what does it feel like to come up short of the finals 2 years in a row?
It's exciting. I don't know why people would think it would hurt. I mean, it's exciting for me. I'm 23. I get to do it a whole bunch of times. I'm hurt more so for myself, for Mike. I came up short for Mike. Like I said, we tried last year. We couldn't get it. We tried again this year. I'm going to try again next year. But hurting is a terrible word to use. I'm good. Yeah.
Yeah, Anthony Edwards. This is the same guy that was compared to Michael Jordan this time last year. A lot of different, you know, commentary online about Anthony Edwards and his postgame comments. I don't have too much of a problem with it because I know the relationship between him and Mike Conley, the 37-year-old guard for the Minnesota Timberwolves. If Minnesota's going to get better moving forward next year, I think Mike Conley may have to be upgraded this offseason. And I get wanting to keep him around and the camaraderie that you have and all that, but hey, at some point, man, you got to get better. This is 2 years in a row. This team has come up short in the conference finals, and I think Anthony Edwards has to look himself in the mirror. He was pretty open about that last night as well, saying, I've got to get better. There's no one that's going to work harder than me this summer to get us back here, and he's absolutely right. He's got to be better because he got thoroughly outplayed in this series and was not as big of a help as he should have been. The one silver lining right now that I think folks are holding out hope for when it comes to the Minnesota Timberwolves, easy money. May be coming to town sooner rather than later. Metal Chris, I know you know about the exodus that's about to happen out in Phoenix and how Kevin Durant's probably played his last minutes there.
Yeah, I think we all knew that as Suns fans about halfway through the season when their record was terrible. And the thing that stunk was like they actually started off the season very good for the first like 10, 20 games.
They got hurt again.
And then it was just spiraled of, you know, just
disaster.
High expectations and none of them met.
Kevin will be playing somewhere else most likely next year. I think Minnesota's at the top of the short list there. They look like they need more guys that can create for themselves than others. Julius Randle was a no-show in this series as well. So we'll see how they bounce back. But the Oklahoma City Thunder advancing to the finals. Who will they meet in the finals? We'll find that out later on tonight. Pacers and Knicks, game number 5. Tyrese Halliburton and company looking to put an end to the Cinderella story of the New York Knicks. We'll take a quick timeout when we come back. Mentioned it off the top. James Wood continuing to dominate for the Washington Nationals. What is next for the homegrown superstar? We'll touch on that coming up here on The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Just getting rolling here on this Thursday night edition of Overtime. You're tapped into the youngest in Charles and L. Willingham. I'll take you up to 9:10. Late night Nats on deck. The fellas wrap up their series against the Seattle Mariners tonight. Mackenzie Gore on the bump for the Nationals. First pitch set for 9:40. Charlie Slows and Dave Jack will get you warmed up at 9:10 right here on The Fan. As we ease our way into the 7 o'clock hour, we'll talk a little bit about the Washington Nationals. We'll look at the good, the bad, and the ugly with the Curly W's as they look to have some more success out west. Last night, the bats for the Washington Nationals in Fuego. Really, really good night at the plate for the fellas. 12 hits, 9 RBIs, 4 homers, including Robert Hassel hitting his first career home run, a big piece of that Juan Soto trade several years back. So the 23-year-old coming up and making hay with this group. Happy to see him, put it together here when called upon during the regular season because of how well he hit it during spring training. And there was a conversation coming out of the spring. Is it going to be Bobby Barrels or J.Y., right? Is it going to be Robert Hassel III? Is it going to be Jacob Young? And obviously they went with Jacob Young, but now with some of the attrition that D.C. has suffered in that outfield, Robert Hassel ready when his number is called. And that's been was really good to see him continue to grow and develop. They're going to have a very interesting dilemma coming up here once Dylan Cruz and Jacob Young get healthy because you got a bunch of good outfielders here. Enough for you to swing a trade? I don't know. But we'll see what type of roster moves they make once Cruz and Jacob Young become healthy. C.J. Abrams C.J. Abrams 0 for 4 last night from the plate. His slump continues. And I know Nationals fans out there, a little bit of panic with him because of the slump he suffered last year and why he suffered that slump and how they put contract negotiations on pause. I just think he's slumping. I don't think it's anything to be, worried about. I don't think it's anything to lose sleep over. He'll bounce back. I think he's got the right mental makeup, and I just think he's got too much aura to stay in a slump too long. One guy that hasn't slumped at all this year is the phenom that is Papa James, as I'm about to start calling him. He's got a deal right now. Whenever he hits a homer and you use the promo code JW50, you get 50% off your pizza from Papa John's. He went yard again last night for his 15th home run of the season, tied for 4th in the National League.
George Kirby has retired Wood twice. First pitch here in the 5th inning. It's cracked a mile high, deep right field. When will it land? Oh, my goodness. Off the facing of the second deck. James Wood has done it again. That's number 15, makes it 6-0. Get yourself some pizza, James Wood. That was a tape measure home run for the second night in a row. My, oh, my.
Yeah, he has been absolutely awesome. These numbers via our guy, Grant Paulson. Full list of MLB players hitting over 280 with 15 homers and 8 stolen bases. Shohei Ohtani and James Wood. So that'd tell you just how well this young man is playing. 22 years old, first full season up in the bigs, on pace for 45 homers and 120 RBIs. No one in Nats history has ever accomplished that feat. Nobody in Nats history has ever hit 45 homers. And the only guy to ever drive in 120 runs was Anthony Rendon. So, look, man, sound the alarm. Sound the alarm. He's already a superstar, people. So much so that I think we got to start having questions about where he ranks amongst the current figures in D.C. sports. And we'll get into that over the next couple of days. I'm with you a lot. But with you until 9:10 tonight, I wanted to give some love to James Wood before we actually got to some pretty interesting numbers surrounding the Washington Nationals. I want to get to those on the other side of the break. Don't go anywhere. 1-800-636-1067 is the number. You can tweet at me as well. It is at NELL_BTP. Loaded 7 o'clock hour coming your way. We'll let you hear some of Mike Rizzo from the Junkies from yesterday as he did his best to try and save face after Ken Rosenthal went scorched earth during his piece written in The Athletic. Also in this 7 o'clock hour, Ken Rosenthal's colleague from The Athletic, Britt Giroli, going to join us. She'll answer for her colleague and give her perspective on what it is and what it ain't with the Washington Nationals. All that and more coming up next here on The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Party continues right here on this Thursday night edition of Overtime. You're tapped in to the youngest in charge, Lynnell Willingham. I'll take you up the 9-10. Charlie Slows and Dave Jagler bring you our coverage of Washington Nationals baseball. At that time, fellas out in Seattle trying to take 2 out of 3 against the first place team in the AL West. Mackenzie Gore on the bump tonight for DC. It is a 9:40 pitch. And per usual, you can hear all of the action right here on The Fan. We have spent a good amount of time talking Washington Nationals baseball to start this show. We'll continue to do so here in this 7 o'clock hour. Last night, big 9-0 winners. Against Seattle, the bats were hot, as I mentioned, 14 hits. Robert Hassel homers for the first time in his career. Josh Bell waking up. And that's how you know the bats were hot last night for the Nationals. Even Josh Bell getting in on the party, and we all know the struggles that he's had this year. So cool to see him bouncing back. Luis Garcia going yard last night. It was super awesome. But the big story to me, two big stories, right? James Wood. And Robert Hassel. James Wood went yard, and we played it for you last segment. Now fourth in the National League with 15 homers. He is just off to a ridiculous start. And he is such a interesting young man in terms of, like, Bryce Harper, for example. Pizzazz. Flair. Aura. Right? Juan Soto. Showman, aura, ego, confidence, all of that exuded throughout his game. James Wood hits homers and makes it seem as casual as me putting draws on in the morning. That's no big deal. Pull up my Hanes, jog around the base paths. I mean, he is just sick. He's sick. And the thing that stands out the most to me about James Wood, especially for a player of his size, how effortless. And I know we throw that word around a lot when it comes to Major League Baseball and guys having good swings, but his swing is genuinely effortless. So I'm excited for what is to come with him. I feel like in terms of, I was thinking on the way in, doing a couple hypotheticals, and maybe we'll touch on this some over the weekend. I'm sitting in Monday. Right here on The Fan, sitting in for B. Mitch and Finley as they get you geared up for their Purple Heart Open coming up this Tuesday. So make sure you keep it locked for that. But a lot of the why I see coming up here, in terms of two rebuilds, Nats and Washington, Nats and the Wizards, rather. I think we tossed this question around before the season started. Who is further along in their rebuild? Who was in a better spot? And I think there was some question. It was up for debate. Now, even with Ken Rosenthal going scorched earth, right? The Wizards don't have their James Wood yet. And I think that's the best way that I could describe who he is. He is a franchise-altering, superstar caliber of a player, man. And the Nats are super fortunate to have him here. Got to start thinking down the road a little bit here, too, when it comes to James Wood and how important it's going to be to keep him in the fold here long term. I continue to say it. Of the guys that were acquired in that Juan Soto deal, I would think C.J. Abrams is the most likely to extend because he's not represented by Scott Boras. He is a Roc Nation client. The second guy I would think, I mean, Mackenzie Gore is shoving. And we'll see him again tonight in his, you know, league leading. I think it's 96 punchouts throughout the first portion of this season. But I look at James Wood, only Maryland, local cat, knows everything about this franchise because he grew up watching him. Why would you not? I mean, it'd be one of the greatest stories, especially if he continues to reach the heights that we think he's capable of. It would be one of the best stories in all of professional sports. Local, hometown kid saves professional baseball franchise. Doesn't that have a ring to it? It does to me.
Now, that's the positive when it comes to the Washington Nationals. And, you know, despite what, like I continue to say, despite what Ken Rosenthal put out, there are a lot of positives when it comes to the Washington Nationals. And I think anybody that, you know, follows this team, loves this team, like, it's okay to lean into them. It is, because I think it's a good group. I think they're getting better. Now, I think that Ken Rosenthal piece, the timing of it, I continue to say it was weird. But now that I think about it, the MLB draft's coming up. And the Nats have the number one overall pick. So a big key talking point in this article from Ken Rosenthal was their inability to draft, develop, and retain talent. It is relevant now that you think about it, because they're getting ready to make another franchise-altering decision with that number one overall pick. Which route do they go? Which route do they go? I know a lot of people, you know, predict that it's going to be Ethan Holliday, the brother of Jackson Holliday. Either way, they got to hit on this pick. And not only do they have to hit on this pick, they got to hit on others as well. Where is our Spencer Strider? Where is our guy that comes out of nowhere to mid-rounder that turns into a Cy Young Award winner, right? Where is our third-round catcher that turns into an all-star, right? Like, that's the type of stuff I think this franchise has continued to miss. But if you are not privy to the story, Ken Rosenthal of The Athletic just going scorched earth on the Washington Nationals and, you know, where they lack as an organization. The headline reads, Nationals remain among MLB's bottom feeders despite lengthy rebuild. And a couple of numbers in here stick out like a sore thumb. The one thing that I would say in the defense of the Washington Nationals in this piece, you can't cry over spilt milk, right? Like, the picks that they have drafted and selected and haven't had come to fruition yet, it is what it is. You know, you still got time for some of these dudes, but I know a lot of folks screaming about Elijah Green and Rizzo's comments on him from yesterday. But bottom line is, you haven't won enough. And I get it. You gutted your roster. You traded Soto. You traded, you know, Trey Turner. You traded Kyle Schwarber. You gutted this. You traded Max. But since 2019, the Nats have the third most losses in all of the majors. Like, that's not a good look. I don't care. I know James Wood has showed promise, right? I know Mackenzie Gore showed promise. You got to win at some point. 2019 gets further and further away each and every day. And at some point, 2019 is not going to be enough of a crutch for you as an organization to prevent this fan base from becoming apathetic. I think that's what we're on the brink of. That is what we're on the brink of. I want to let you hear from the folks at Baseball America who had just, it's some numbers that are going to make you vomit, man, when it comes to the Washington Nationals and the big issue we're talking about, drafting, developing, maintaining. Here's some the pals from Baseball America talking about the Nats farm system in 2025.
The Nationals are dead last in on-base percentage, dead last in walk rate. And when I say dead last in walk rate, there are only two teams who have a sub 10% walk rate for their minor league hitters, them and the Pirates. On the pitching side, they are 25th or worst in almost every pitching category other than home runs allowed. If you're bad at hitting stats and pitching stats, that's not a great sign.
It's another one of these organizations where I think on the fringes, things haven't really been great. You know, they haven't utilized fourth and fifth round picks to target college starters that have turned into, you know, potential major league pieces. You haven't seen a lot of that. They need some more fresh blood and they need some guys to step up and perform, because we really haven't seen that. You know, outside of like a Brad Lord or someone like that, there hasn't been a lot of sort of pop up interesting stories in this national system to follow the last few years.
Ouch. Not kind words, but all facts from the folks at Baseball America. And look, if they are going to get out of this thing and turn themselves into a consistent winner, they tried to buy their way through the bad ability to draft and develop and retain through the mid-2000s where they were spending money, which is why it's so ironic to me. All the folks out there that say the learners are reluctant to spend, like, they've spent money. Look at the mid 2010s into 2019. You were consistently with one of the top payrolls in all of Major League Baseball. I think now what it's going to take for this ownership group to spend is the young pup showing enough promise to where it's, hey, we're ready to go compete. Because it's one thing to have a big payroll. It's one thing to have no payroll and lose. It's another thing to have a massively sized payroll and lose. So we'll see. 1-800-636-1067 is the number. When we come back, there is an answer that Mike Rizzo gave yesterday on the Junkies that kind of is just unacceptable to me. We'll let you hear from the manager, from the president of baseball operations of the Washington Nationals, coming up next on The Fan. is the number. You can tweet at me as well. It's at N-E-L-L underscore BTP. You're tapped into the youngest in Charles and L. Willingham, taking you up to 9-10 tonight. Before we hand things over to Charlie Slows and Dave Jagler, they'll get you warmed up for Washington Nationals baseball. We've been talking all things Curly W's to start the show here. They're just a fascinating bunch to me. And because of the story that came out, was yesterday, or 2 days ago rather, via The Athletic, Ken Rosenthal coming off the top rope on this Nationals organization and pointing out some of the shortcomings that they've had during this rebuild. The most important thing that I feel like he hit on and that matters to me and should matter to you all as fans is not the lack of spending from the Lerner family. It's not that. I continue to say that. The more that I talk to folks, the more that I realize, like, that's not the problem. Their inability to draft, develop, and retain talent, to me, has been the Achilles heel of this organization. In terms of that combination, it's almost like a deadly cocktail, is how I would describe it, right? There are certain medicines out there as humans you cannot take. And that's relevant to me personally because I recently started watching Metal Chris. I don't know if you peeped what came out on Netflix yesterday. The Tylenol scandal back from the 80s when people were getting laced with cyanide via Tylenol. That's crazy as hell, bro.
Haven't seen the show on it, but I do know about it. I remember when that was like a big thing. It's why they started putting all the safety seals on pills stuff, and everything. Yeah.
It's crazy, man. I keep falling asleep on it because, as you know, I can't sit in the dark and watch things.
They ever catch the guy that did it?
So I got to rewatch. I watched most of the first episode. The second episode started playing as I took my little pre-show nap, and I woke up in the middle of it, and he was talking
about
the documentary. So
they must have caught him at some point then,
So he ended up being cleared and not held responsible. I think it ended up, I don't know. I don't want to get...
Was it not a crime at the time? They didn't have a law for that or something?
They were trying to... I mean, Johnson & Johnson took some of the blame for it as well, too, if I'm not mistaken. But I don't want to get to lying to the people or even spoil anything. If you got any... free time, man. In the summertime is always the best time to do stuff like this. The Cold Case series on Netflix highlighting the Tylenol murders from the 80s, and I thought that was just nuts.
Man, they got to do one on the Purdue guys that were doing the prescription, the painkillers that everybody was getting.
Sheesh, okay. I'm not familiar with that.
And they were like, you know, they basically told everyone that they weren't as addictive as they were, and then they started selling the treatment once you got addicted to it. Like, oh, it was like a whole scam to just like sell more
to get people to take.
Yeah,
it.
Yeah, it wasn't sport related. Well, no, but it was like a lot of people that had athletes were getting it. But other people too, like a lot of military veterans, if you had like serious surgeries, things like that, and it was like this whole scam that they basically got everybody hooked on. On these drugs that they were then selling the addiction cure for as well. It's like this whole...
they like monopolized the whole
thing. Yeah, and the government sued the pants off them. They sued them for, tons of money.
The government does
stuff,
that but... in real life.
No. I mean, it's another true story. It's another one of those, like, I don't know.
The government does... I mean,
the big
no
scandals
reason.
With the drugs is what
there's
I was
no
thinking
reason.
About.
There's so. No reason that, like, diabetes is one of the most common ailments amongst folks in America. Insulin costs the amount of money that it does.
It costs that much in America. It doesn't cost that much everywhere else.
Because America's the problem. But I go from that to this. The only reason I brought that up is we were talking about cocktails and the deadly cocktail that the Nationals organization has. They don't draft, develop, and retain talent, and they don't spend money. You can't have both. Not that way. If you had one or the other, I think you'd be way better off. But Ken Rosenthal pointed it out in this article, man. The shortcomings of the Nats payroll, their inability to re-sign guys. And then when you look at the talent on this roster, the good pieces, right, the pieces that you feel confident about, were not homegrown talent. They were a part of that Juan Soto deal. I go back and forth with that because don't the Nats deserve credit for that? Juan Soto was going to go to free agency regardless, no matter what had happened.
You were not happy at that time, though, I remember.
I was on air the day that the trade went down, and we ended up staying on the air for like an extra hour. I mean, that was the first time I really went into taking calls on the Nats because, you know, as you get older in this thing, you expand your pitching repertoire, right? You add another club to your bag, so to speak. And as you know now, you won't hear me crack the mic without mentioning the Washington Nationals during baseball season. But even that, to your point, Chris, the vitriol that folks had toward this organization for letting them go, now that we're a couple of years removed from this thing, I think Mike Rizzo deserves a ton of credit for the Juan Soto deal. And I think anyone would tell you, when it comes to old Mike Rizzo, if I was another, you know, president of baseball ops throughout Major League Baseball, when he calls, I need to pick up the phone. He's going to finesse me. He is going to get the better end of the deal. And it feels like this is something that routinely happens, man. So we'll see. 1-800-636-1067. I do want to let you all hear from Mike Rizzo, who was on with the Junkies yesterday. The timing of it, you know, shout out to him. He could have pulled a Kevin Willard and canceled when there was some pressure in the media about him. But he took it on the chin like a G. The Junks did a tremendous job, as always, peppering him with questions. This is what Mike Rizzo had to say about Ken Rosenthal alleging that they had not drafted well.
You know, I guess you could pick at certain draft choices and picks and that type of thing over the last years, and you could find some faults there. But you know, when I look at we've run some of the great players in the game through our system. We've drafted some of the great players ever. We've drafted guys low in the draft that have won Cy Youngs and that type of thing. So there's. I just thought the timing of the article was odd because we were playing good and we really are seeing the fruits of this frustrating rebuild coming to fruition. But I'm still optimistic. The needle of this team and this organization is pointed north, and it's going to continue to do so until we start winning championships, which I think is in the very near future.
Mike Rizzo yesterday on with the Junks. It's tough with that answer for me. I'll be honest with you. Mike, it was very easy for him. What he should have did yesterday was very clear. To act as if you have been good at drafting, developing, and retaining talent, it's a flat-out lie, man. And I think the actions of this organization over the past couple of years should show you that.
It reminds me of the kind of stuff like Ron Rivera would say or something, Chris, right? Right,
Chris, you just ripped off. It's like having a Band-Aid on all day and you got hair on your arms. Yuck! Yuck! I mean, that's what it feels like. It's like ripping off a Band-Aid because you're spot on. This is Ron Rivera-esque. And Mike Rizzo's better than that, man. He is. He is the second longest tenured head of baseball ops in all of Major League Baseball outside of, you know, Cashman with the Yanks. Like, he knows what he's doing. But these moves that Ken Rosenthal listed out in this article should show you that there is some concern amongst, you know, the organization about their ability to draft and develop. Eddie Longo's, longtime scouting executive with the club, replaced DeJean Watson as farm director. Chris Klein, the director of amateur scouting for 14 years, has been ushered into a special assistance role, replaced by Danny Haas of the Diamondbacks. John D. Pagulia, who's another guy that's been long tenured as the head of international scouting, he resigned without any explanation. So you don't make those moves to your scouting department, to your development department, without there being some concerns, some doubts, some reservations amongst how well they do their job. And if they're not doing their job well, that's the explanation for why you haven't hit on these picks. That's why Ken Rosenthal can say what he said. And see, Rizzo can deflect all he wants. Rizzo can come up there and say what he wants. The proof is in the pudding. We get to see Elijah Green just got sent down to rookie ball. And we're trying to act like this group has drafted and developed well? Give me a break. He called Elijah Green one of the most toolsy, skillful players in the organization. So why the hell have you brought him to rookie ball? Come on, Mike Rizzo. Thought he had a golden opportunity yesterday on his home station. It's not like he's on MLB Network getting cooked. The jokes are on your side. Damn it, we're the Washington Nationals Radio Network. And yet you still gave terrible answers, in my opinion. 1-800-636-1067. We'll take a quick timeout. When we come back, we'll wrap up our convo on the Nats, getting some more perspective. Britt Giroli, who covered the Washington Nationals for several years for The Athletic, is going to join us next and give us her thoughts on her colleague's piece, calling the Nationals one of the bottom feeders in all of Major League Baseball. Britt Giroli joins us next. One 800 636 1067, the number. You can tweet at me as well. It is at @NELL_BTP. Tapped in to the youngest in Charles and L. Willingham. I'll take you up the 9:10. 9:40, the first pitch for Nats and Mariners. Mackenzie Gore getting the ball tonight for DC as they look to make it 2 out of 3 at T-Mobile Park. They're back in action tomorrow, starting a weekend series with the Arizona Diamondbacks before coming back home next week to start a 3-game series with the Cubs on Monday. So right in the thick of things when it comes to Washington Nationals baseball. Make sure you keep it locked right here on The Fan to hear all 162 for the Curly W's. 1-800-636-1067. Continuing to react to Mike Rizzo on the Junkies yesterday, and then Ken Rosenthal of The Athletic going scorched earth on the organization, talking about the Nats and the piece he wrote for The Athletic. I was recently joined, this was yesterday, wanted to air it for you all yesterday, but didn't get the chance to, so we'll play it for you tonight. I caught up with senior MLB reporter for The Athletic, Britt Giroli, and got her thoughts on Ken Rosenthal going scorched earth on Washington. Right now, we continue our conversation on the Washington Nationals with our pal, Britt Giroli, senior writer for The Athletic, covering Major League Baseball. Give her a follow on the old X app at Britt_Giroli. That is BRITT_GHIROLI. Britt, what's going on, my friend? How are you?
What's going on, Linnell? I'm good. How are you?
I'm so happy to hear from you. We'll give a little radio insider here for a second. I got the chance to work with Britt a couple of years back, producing some shows for her on 106.7 The Fan. She is obviously doing great things, one of the best writers in all of Major League Baseball, so make sure you check out her stuff in The Athletic. Super cool having a kind of a full circle moment with you, my friend. Happy to have you on the airwaves, and I hope the family is doing well. I want to get right into it, though, Britt. Your colleague over at The Athletic, Ken Rosenthal, dipped his pen in blood before writing the piece on Washington yesterday. What kind of stands out the most about this piece, Britt? And do you hear, I guess, where Ken is coming from?
Yeah, so, you know, full disclosure, I read that piece before it went live because Ken knows I'm familiar with the Nationals, was on the Nationals beat, still live in this area. And I think that there were a lot of fair points in that article. But to me, the one thing that, and I said this to Ken, and I think he did a good job hammering it, is the developing. The development for the Washington Nationals needs to get better. I think Mike Rizzo, who declined to talk for the story, would agree. I think anybody who objectively looks at this team, whether or not you feel good about the future and some of the guys they got from the Soto trade or not, I think you have to look at it as, who are the Nationals developing? Who are they making better? You know, and I think that has been a big hole. It has been a sore spot. It's been something that they've tried to address. And until we see the fruits of that labor, I think you have to continue to question, you know, how they are developing players within their farm system.
Yeah, I think that is a big issue. The way I describe it, Britt, is kind of like a deadly cocktail of ownership not spending and you're not drafting and developing your own talent. Like, that's a tough spot to be in if you want to be a perennial winner. I always give the ownership group a little bit of leeway, Britt, because, face it, they didn't get to capitalize off of the ticket gate post-World Series, the spike in merchandise and the spike in popularity and interest. How much do you think that played a role in their lack of spending here over the past several years?
Yeah, I do think that is an interesting thing. And, you know, I was on with our friend Ben Standing on this fine station the other night and brought up that same point that I do think when you go at ownership, you have to go out with the caveat that the learners have spent.
Yeah.
They have spent when the team has been good. They have spent when there is a chance for the team to compete. And they have spent on pitching. We know those always haven't turned out to be good contracts,
right.
But they paid Patrick Corbin a lot of money. They paid Steven Strasburg a lot of money. You could make the case that they have struggled and have not spent money on position players, and that would be accurate, right? We've seen Juan Soto go, Trey Turner, Bryce Harper go. Right. It doesn't instill a lot of confidence in some of the, you know, the young position players they have right now signing. But I do think if you are the Lerner family, you have to kind of look at it as, okay, is this going to be the winter that we start to try again? Is this going to be the time here? Because, you know, 2019 was a long time ago now.
Yeah.
You have to start to see the fruits of the rebuild. You have to start to see things move forward. And I think both them and GM Mike Rizzo kind of have to move with a sense of urgency now to get this team good quickly while these young guys are under team control.
One thing that Ken reported on, Britt, that I actually wasn't privy to, I think the Post had it as well. It must have just slipped through the cracks for me. They, you know, started contract negotiations last spring with C.J. Abrams, but those talks obviously didn't go too far. He's not a Boris guy. He's represented by Roc Nation, so you would think that gives him a little better of a shot of signing him long term. But, like, of the three guys that I'm thinking of here, talking about Wood, Mackenzie Gore, and C.J. Abrams, who do you think has the best shot of re-signing?
God, that's a good question. I think that they really looked at Abrams and wanted him to be a part of the future, and then I think there were some character issues, obviously, down the stretch, and, you know, that gives teams pause because you're not just investing in the player, you're investing in the person. And so, you know, I think probably I'd give the edge to Gore right now. I wish I could say James Wood would be the guy, but, you know, I think based off of his agent being Scott Boras and, you know, the kind of superstar potential he's already shown, I think, unfortunately, that ship might have failed unless some of that money that we heard that was big, you know, $400+ million that was ticketed for Juan Soto, you know, maybe some of that money is in the coffer still, and they can use that on a James Wood, because that's kind of the only way you're going to keep a guy like that, you know, even though he is several years away from being a free agent. So, you know, I think you have to do something. I think you have to extend someone, because you look up the road, Linnell, to Baltimore, and you look at how quickly a promising young core can kind of not look quite as promising anymore, right? None of those guys are locked up. They're getting 1 year closer to free agency this year in what will probably be a lost season. And so I think the Nationals, and for so long Mike Rizzo has said they were trying to follow the playbook of the Orioles, I think you have to look at what they've done a little bit with caution and say, how do we avoid this happening? And that, to me, is the biggest question right now. And it starts with locking up young guys and also making them better up here, which the Orioles have failed to do as well. Guys that come up here now are not finished products. You know, this is the change in baseball from 10, 15 years ago. Guys come up and they still need developing. They still need help. And that is something that we have to see the Nationals execute and execute well.
One other thing that Ken hits on, Britt, we only got a couple moments left with you. I appreciate you making some time. I guess I'll end with a scouting question. I know they've made some significant moves to kind of revamp that scouting department over the past 2 years. Do you look at Mike Rizzo, who is one of the, you know, longest tenured, you know, head of baseball ops in the league, and go, maybe his eye for talent just isn't the same anymore because the game has changed quite a bit since he first taken over?
Right. Yeah, I don't know if I would say that. You know, I'm not intimately involved with that team on a day-to-day basis. I think they've made some changes in certain departments as a way of kind of saying, we need to get better. We need to do different things in the process. I think a lot of teams are looking at their processes and constantly fine-tuning them. I think the proof is going to be in these young guys who are up here. I mean, the guys they got from Soto in that trade were already
right.
Really good prospects, right? They weren't like the Padres' 10th and to 15th best prospects. Right. You know, so a lot of that developing was already done for them. Now can they take the next step, right? James Wood isn't a guy who needs a lot of work. You know, I want to see the Nationals' fourth rounder make the big leagues. I want to see, you know, a guy that was in the sixth or seventh round out of nowhere, and the Nationals added a pitch, and all of a sudden he's a lot better. You see that with other organizations?
Where's our Spencer Strider?
Right, you don't see it as much with the Nationals, and that's something that even going back to 19, when I was on the Nationals beat for the Athletic, me and Jesse Dougherty, who used to be with the Washington Post on the Nats beat, would talk about that. Like, who have they developed? And for a while, they covered it up by spending money, by buying the Max Scherzers and the Corbins and such, but they really have to now, if they're not going to spend money, and Ken pointed this out so eloquently, you got to do something. They don't develop and they don't spend money, and that is a lethal combination. So I think, you know, for Mike Rizzo, they really need to look at their processes and say, okay, how can we support this young core that we traded for? It was an excellent trade.
Right.
Mike Rizzo is an absolutely fantastic trader. I don't think anybody could argue that at all. I think the argument is, are they going to be able to support the guys they traded for to create a window of success? And that is the question.
Yes, indeed. We will patiently wait, and I'll be biting my fingernails to see how they finish leading up to the trade deadline coming up in about a month and a half. But Britt, always good catching up with you, my friend. We will talk soon. I hope all is well with you and yours.
Okay, thanks. Take care, Linnell.
That is Britt Ciroli, one of the absolute best, talking all things seam ball. Give her a follow on the X app at BRITT_GHIROLI. Britt Ciroli, senior writer for The Athletic. Always love catching up with Britt, one of the absolute best, talking all things seam ball, as I said. She just keeps it honest, and we'll wrap the conversation up with this. I think despite some of the negative things that were pointed out by Ken Rosenthal, and despite, you know, some of the shortcomings of the organization, I don't know, after further review, would I call them a bottom feeder of Major League Baseball. 1-800-636-1067 is the number. We'll take a quick timeout. When we come back, a lot more to get to. We'll keep it local. Before we, you know, push our way out of the 7 o'clock hour, the Washington Capitals made a major, major boo-boo on social media. And let's just say it has some folks feeling like the end may be near for the great eight Alex Ovechkin. We'll give you the details on that next. This is The Fan. NBA playoffs on tap tonight. We'll keep you up to speed with Knicks and Pacers Game 5 as we roll throughout the final hour of this show. This is Overtime here on 106.7 The Fan. We're always live and free on the Odyssey app. Linnell Willingham taking up the 9-10. Nats baseball coming up following your boys. So make sure you keep it live and local all night long here on The Fan. 9:40 first pitch, Mackenzie Gore on the bump for the Washington Nationals. We'll wrap up. We wrapped up our conversation just now on the Washington Nationals, and real quick, just to put a bow on things, I don't know if the future is as bleak as Ken Rosenthal makes it seem. I want to get to this story, though, from Front Office Sports. On Thursday, the Capitals emailed season ticket holders. They sent an email out to all the season ticket holders, and in that email, it read, October. The start of Capitals hockey and Alex Ovechkin's final NHL season, the email read. They had to follow up with an email saying that no decision has been made on Ovi's future following the 2025-2026 season. An email was sent from an individual with the corporate sales department that mistakenly alluded to next year being Ovechkin's final season. Ovi has come out and said he will play in his age 40 season. Also the final year of Alex Ovechkin's contract. So the speculation about next year being it for him clearly is not something that's just like totally unwarranted. So, yeah, I'm curious to see how that ultimately, you know, works itself out. But what a massive blunder. What a massive blunder. And if he does choose to not play, it now looks like the Nats have, like, butchered their rollout here with this. I was listening to Danny and Toby earlier today, and I thought they had a fascinating conversation on what is next for the Washington Capitals. And to be honest with you,
I think this group, obviously you want the goal scoring, right? Like, he's elite at that. This group moving forward may be better off without one Alex Ovechkin. And I think the moves they made this offseason set themselves up for the future. That is seven players this past summer, right? Pierre-Luc Dubois, Logan Thompson, Jacob Chychrun, Matt Roy. All four of those guys under contract for at least the next 5 years. So last summer has really set this organization up, in my opinion, to have sustained success. I really do believe that. And this is a team, that in 2023, just 91 points, final wild card spot, a minus 37 goal differential. But shout out to Brian McClellan and his staff, man, going to work, adding to the roster, making themselves better. The future of that group is bright. I think the question just is now, how do you get faster? That to me is the conversation here. What personnel moves can you make to improve your team's speed? Because that is currently the issue right now with the Washington Capitals. But would I view this year and them being the number one seed as a flash in the pan? No. I think it is replicable next season, because they are returning the entirety of their core, and they should have a little bit more financial flexibility as well in case they want to make some out-of-the-org moves. So we'll see. We will see. I think the bigger, more polarizing conversation is, damn, should we want Alex Ovechkin to continue? Should we want Ovechkin to sign an extension at this point, or is he somebody that maybe you need to move on from? And I understand anytime you're dealing with a franchise legend such as Ovechkin, it's a delicate, delicate balance. It is. You don't want to piss anybody off in Alex Ovechkin's camp. He's done so much for this city, for this organization, that I think there's a fine line you have to walk in. In reality, it's tough. You got to let him go out on his terms.
I'd kind of like to see him go for 1,000.
Oh, it's no shot. Two more years?
Yeah, he could do it.
That'd probably take 2-3 more years.
But if he doesn't break another leg, you'll be fine.
At this point, I'm done with the milestones. Give me hardware.
I'd still love to see it. It'd be so cool.
For sure. But hardware. I'd rather him win a Stanley Cup than get 1,000 goals.
Of course, but why not both, my friend? Think big.
Huh. There's an old meme about thinking big. But no, I think one of those is way more realistic than the others. I don't think he plays 2-3 more years to get to 1,000, but next year's team, depending on what type of moves they make, I think could be in position to be right back where they were this year. The number one seed in the conference, one of the elite teams in the sport. I think there are a couple of moves they got to make this offseason to get faster. I don't know what out of organization move that is, but something has to give. I don't think they could run it back with this current group. Maybe they can, though. Because you think about some of the key pieces that they were missing during the Stanley Cup playoff run. Most importantly, Martin Fierravari, Logan Thompson not being healthy. I don't care what anybody thinks. No way he was healthy after what happened to him in the opening round series against Montreal. Like, there was a reason I thought he stunk it up against Carolina. So, we'll see, though. Bigger picture, Caps PR, do better. That's tough. That's a bad break to have your season ticket holders think that this is it for the Great Eight. And it's not. 1-800-636-1067 is the number. Plenty more to get to. Like I said, we'll take you up to 9:10 as we get you geared up for Washington Nationals baseball. When we get back, though, a bunch of different things we can touch on. Varon Shankar of the Washington Post is going to join us at about 8:30. To give us his thoughts on the Washington Wizards and the NBA draft. He just put out a season review of Wizards' number 2 overall pick, Alex Saar. Who does Varun, I think the Wizards are going to go with that number 6 overall pick and the number 18 overall pick? The other question is this: do they stick and pick at 6, or do they move up? Same thing can be asked about pick number 18 as well. All that more comes your way next here on The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.